You are listening to the best of the Dennis Prager Show. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show. I'm Dennis Prager. Thank you for being with me on a short list of people who have written important, truly important matters. Nicholas Eberstadt would be one of those on that list. Last name is spelled E-B-E-R-S-T-A-D-T. You can control a lot in your life, but you can't control your last name. That's, you know, it would have been easier had it been Jones. No question, right?
What can you do?
What can you do, exactly? It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
No, it's so important that I'm just so excited to have you on. The Poverty of the Poverty Rate.
Yeah.
Is the book that he has come out with, and this great place, the American Enterprise Institute, has published it. Measure and Mismeasure of Want in Modern America. We talk about the poverty line in America, the number of Americans living in poverty. We throw out that term all the time, and there isn't one probably in 100,000 Americans who has a clue as to what that means.
Yeah, you're probably right, Dennis. It's a statistical measure that was invented more or less at the start of the war on poverty to try to get some sort of a handle on how the country was doing in its struggle against poverty. And there was a group of statisticians at the Social Security Administration who came up with a arbitrary but not unreasonable approach to trying to measure want. They took what was then the Agriculture Department's modest food budget for a nutritionally adequate but pretty stringent food budget for a family. They multiplied it by a factor of 3 to get a budget line for the family as a whole. Why by a factor of 3? Because in the 1950s, Americans spent a third of their income on food. They fiddled around to get a bunch of different, what they called a matrix, which is just a fancy way of saying some equivalent budgets for different size families. And they established what turned out to be, more or less forever, a national, as you said, so-called poverty line. The poverty line only changes over time in accordance with the rate of inflation, with price changes, so that a family with a dollar over this poverty line is counted as not being poor. A family with a dollar under this poverty line is counted as being poor. We've been using it for almost 45 years.
In contemporary dollars, what does it mean?
In contemporary dollars, if you have a family with two adults and two kids, it's set at a little over $21,000. If you've got a single parent with two kids, it's set at $16,500.
All right, let's deal right now with the family, let's say. So if the family's income is $21,000 or under, it is considered to be living in poverty, a family of four.
It's defined as poor, yeah.
Okay. Or poverty, right? We use
yep.
poverty and poor interchangeably.
Exactly.
Okay, good, because the language is critical
exactly.
here. Okay, does that include things like food stamps?
It does not include a couple of things. It does not include in-kind. It doesn't include anything that doesn't come in as money, that doesn't come in as usable cash. So if you got housing subsidies, if you got food subsidies, if you got health subsidies, none of that would be counted as cash. If you got, for reasons known only perhaps to God and the Office of Management and Budget, if you got an earned income tax credit, that isn't counted as cash. Why? Because it's a tax credit instead of cash. Don't ask me.
All right. Well, if only cash income counts, I mean, I know this is hardly typical, but I just want to understand then if I were bequeathed, let's say a parent died
yep.
and bequeathed to the child a beautiful home
yep.
that does not count?
You got it. Assets don't
count. So I could live in a mansion in the and be in poverty?
You sure could.
In a million-dollar mansion. So wait a minute. It also does not include net worth?
No.
So I could be worth, I could have a net worth of $1 million.
Yep.
And completely clear, have no mortgage. And
if you had a suitcase with $1 million in your home that wasn't drawing interest on a bank account, and you were somehow or other making or earning $5,000 a year, despite that suitcase, you'd be in poverty. You'd be designated as in poverty by this.
Then why isn't every retired person considered in poverty?
A lot of retired people were considered in poverty, but a lot of retired people are taken out of poverty by this measure. Remember, I'm talking about this measure, not reality. They're taken out of poverty by this measure through Social Security. Social Security has pushed down the measured poverty rate of older people in the United States.
I have no agenda in saying this, but it seems to me to be absurd.
Well, what?
Because it doesn't count. There are people. I'll be so open as to say I earn a very nice income compared to other Americans, mm-hmm. but if I have a zilch net worth, it doesn't matter. I am considered rich, whereas the guy who actually has a net worth and doesn't make anything because he has a great net worth, he's in poverty.
One has to remember that this indicator, this famous statistic that's always used in Washington, D.C. now and appears in our newspapers, it was brought together in the early 1960s on the basis of what numbers nerds could find in the statistical cellar at the time. So they clapped together, not unreasonably, but based on what they could get their hands on, a number which reported annual income, and compared that to this poverty line. And they said, okay, this is good enough for us to start the
right.
moral poverty
okay. rate. You're being very charitable, unless I'm missing something. Why is the money you have not included? Why is only the money you earn included?
This is the trick, or this is the problem. This indicator, which might have been a good starting point, has been frozen in amber and has become a kind of a gold standard. We've kept to our 1965 technology and to our 1965 statistics in trying to track something we should be doing a way better job on, looking not just, Dennis, not just at people's wealth and net worth, but also at their spending power. The big change that's occurred in America since the poverty rate was established is the breakout of much higher levels of spending year in and year out for lower-income Americans than they report. For the bottom fifth of the income spectrum in the United States, people report spending twice as much money in any given year as they report in income. So the income-based poverty rate can't track.
All right.
That.
So let's see. There are the following possibilities. They have inherited something. Mm-hmm. They are robbing banks. How do you account for that?
Okay. One thought might be that people are maxing out on their credit cards and they're spending more, and there's going to be a kind of a drop off the cliff. So far, I mean, we're going into a pretty bad cycle right now, but the data up until now suggest no. People at the bottom of the income scale are not accumulating debts any more dramatically than people higher up in the income scale. The net worth of people at the bottom of the income scale has been increasing on average.
Right. Anyway, forgive me, but that should be irrelevant to whether or not they're living in poverty. Mm-hmm. They may in the future live in poverty when the debts need to be collected.
Yeah. No, but this is trying to explain how come they're spending more.
Okay, you're right. That's exactly right. Okay.
Spending more than income.
Okay.
I mean, another possibility is that this is all being measured really, really terribly. And I'm sure there's some measurement problem in there. My own guess as to...
All right, tell us your own guess in a moment. I want to reintroduce you as we take a break. Nicholas Eberstadt, one of the great authorities on these matters. The Poverty of the Poverty Rate is his short and important book. I will ask him about hunger next. I mean, what criterion can we use? I admit, my friends, that I say this on more than one occasion, but they're always meant when I say it, that there is no subject more important than this. That means that there are some tied with this, but there are none that are more important. What does poverty rate mean? Because it's so important, not only economically, in our self-image as a country, because we are told so often how many poor are amongst us, and that it reflects on the moral nature of an uncaring, selfish society. So, well, is it true? And is it true meaning, are people really impoverished when they are said to be impoverished? The book on that, and it is the book, is The Poverty of the Poverty Rate. It is up at PragerRadio.com at the section called The Blog, or Blog. Nicholas Eberstadt of the American Enterprise Institute is the author of this very significant book, which meets many of my criteria, including being under 200 pages. Now, I want to tell you something. By the way, what shall I call you?
Nick?
Oh, that's easy. Wow.
Let's be easy.
Nick, you're a good man. Nick, I want to tell you when this became... I first became aware of a certain cognitive dissonance about the word poverty and America. It was when I was a junior in college in England, and I would go to middle-class homes.
Yeah.
And I would see their homes, and I would see what they owned, and I would have some idea of what they earned, and I thought, wow, a lot of the people we say are poor in America live exactly like the middle class in England.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had another, you will love this story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think I ever told this on the air for some reason. When I was 21, they had the World Youth Assembly at the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a commemoration of, I don't remember what, anniversary of the United Nations. And they took youth from all over the world. I mean, all over the world. And I was one representative. I was very lucky to be there. And I remember the youth delegates, who were often in their 40s, from communist countries, asked to go to Harlem to see the suffering of the American underclass. This is what happened. They were taken to Harlem, and when they came back, they actually announced they had been duped, that they had been taken to wealthy areas where blacks lived and not shown the real Harlem.
Mm.
That is how they could not believe that was Harlem.
Yeah.
And so the whole notion begs for clarity.
Yeah.
What does poverty mean in America?
Yeah. Well, as you know, we've got an officially established so-called poverty line. And if your measured money income is below that, you're counted as poor. If it's above that, you're not counted as poor. If you believed that the line was measuring something real, it would say that the prevalence of absolute poverty in America has worsened since 1973. Because America's poverty rate, its percentage of people below the poverty line, was never so low as in the year 1973. But if you live in the same world as I do and not in the bizarro world of the official poverty rate, you see that people's living standards everywhere, even people's living standards at lower incomes, at the lower end of the scale in America, are dramatically, substantially, steadily better than they were in the 70s. They're better. There's better nutrition. There's better housing. There's more stuff in people's houses. People are more likely to have cars, even if they're below the poverty rate. People's health status is generally better. There are other things which are going wrong. We've got crime problems. We've got family breakdown. But those are things which have to do, you might say, with misery. They're not financial, economic, resource measuring aspects of the human condition.
Are any Americans hungry, not because they have mental problems and won't eat, but because they cannot find a meal?
I can't categorically say that there isn't somebody out in America somewhere who couldn't raise his or her hand. What I can tell you is what the physical data on nutrition show. The data on nutrition in the United States show that back in the early 1960s, it looks like there were some people who pretty well could be qualified as saying they considered themselves hungry. They acted like hungry people. If you gave them if you gave them 10% more income, they'd spend 12% more on food. That's what hungry people do when they think they're hungry. Nowadays, it's quite clear that there are nutritional problems for America and for the poverty population, but the overwhelming nutritional problem today for the poverty population is obesity and overweight and overnutrition. It's a nutritional problem, but not one of deprivation.
Is there any reason why a person should, in fact, be hungry?
Because of want.
Because of our inability to feed that person?
Certainly not given the U.S. government's programs, state and local availability programs, and private non-governmental charitable resources. If someone were somehow trapped in an area where they couldn't communicate with anybody for some reason, you could imagine something happening.
So
but
this
in a human network,
okay.
No.
Do we have the recording of who was it who said 30 million Americans? John Edwards. Do we have that? I'd like you to dig it out and play it for Nicholas Eberstadt. John Edwards announced that 30 million Americans or kids, I don't remember if he said Americans or kids, go to bed hungry every night. What is the truth on that?
I can't tell. I haven't been in those 30 million purported households in the United States. I can tell you that when you look at the health statistics that are kept by our government with regard to children's height and weight for low-income poverty-level families for the United States as a whole, about 5% of the children are down at the what they call the medical 5% line. It's not at all different from what you would expect if everybody were perfectly well-nourished with no inadequacies. You can't tell a difference from our health and nutrition statistics.
Do you know where? Oh, you want to play it, if you would. Here, listen.
Because what I saw before we came over here, on your troll on underneath the screen, 35 million Americans last year went hungry.
It's a rather important subject, poverty in America, and how do you measure it? See, the term is thrown around as if we have this clear-cut, objective understanding, and we don't. And the more you understand of it, the less accurate it becomes. It seems to me, Nicholas Eberstadt, author of The Poverty of the Poverty Rate, and again, that is up at PragerRadio.com. The book is at the blog section. It seems to me that somebody must feel that there is a political gain in keeping the numbers the way they are, not to include medical, housing, and food benefits as income is just, frankly, a lie.
Well, we have heard a story again and again that is fundamentally wrong. And the basic storyline going by this poverty rate measure is that the proportion of Americans living below this line of absolute deprivation has gotten worse over the past 30 years. The information that one can check from other commonsensical sources completely confutes this. Number one, people below the poverty line are living better and better in terms of material standards. They may be facing non-economic misery, family breakdown, or crime, or other sorts of degradations, but as far as types of apartments and goods and homes and cars they have, steadily getting better. And that's the way it should be. We want everybody to be part of a rising tide in America.
This 35 million figure that John Edwards, you heard cite, it apparently comes from a Department of Agriculture statistic. Are you familiar with that?
I have heard numbers like that bandied about, but let me try to offer a reality check for it. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are about 80 million children in the United States of the age of 18 or under. If 35 million of them were going to bed hungry, that would mean that almost half of the children in America are...
Well, to be fair, I said children, he said Americans.
Oh, okay. All right. There are about 300 million Americans. This would mean that something over 1 in 10 Americans are going hungry at night. Does that pass the reality test? I think what this number is referring to is some survey data the U.S. government does on what they call food insecurity.
Yes.
They ask people if they are worried about their sources of the next meal or something to that effect. It is basically a subjective question. It is not exactly the same, but it is akin to having one of your kids come home saying, "When's dinner? I'm starving."
Right.
Not count that kid as starving.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going?
Totally. That's why I wanted you to comment on it. And this is a Republican administration's Department of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
One can only imagine what will happen elsewhere. Jason in San Diego, California. The phone number here, folks, is 1-8-PRAGER-776. Thank you for calling, Jason. With Nicholas Eberstadt, I'm Dennis Prager.
Thanks for having me on. Well, I think that it's interesting that you're having this guest on. I mean, just recently, the OECD published a report, Are We Growing Unequal? And the United States, actually, out of the 30 countries that are members of the OECD, ranks number 3 in terms of the gap between rich and poor. And that's of 2005. And the way that they define poverty is really relative, to the amount of money, it's relative to the country itself. So, I mean, for example, you're basically just, comparing how much, people that are poor in the country are making, to the people that are wealthy. And
do you think that that's a good comparison, Jason?
I definitely do.
Jason, hold on. That means that compared to Bill Gates, I'm impoverished.
Wait a second. We're talking about countries.
I know he's in my country. Hold on. I want to continue this. All righty, everybody. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show with my distinguished guest, Nicholas Eberstadt, and his new book, The Poverty of the Poverty Rate, which is more of a monograph in the sense that it's a short book, and it explains this whole question of what is the poverty rate. It's listed at PragerRadio.com at the blog section. And we go back to San Diego, California, and go back to you, Jason. Now, you were taking issue here, and I'm very glad that you called and are taking issue, because it helps clarify things for us and for the listeners, and hopefully for you. So your problem is that...
Well, my problem is basically that it seems that conservatives just want to debunk or explain away poverty and pretend like it doesn't exist. And, you know, going back to the OECD report, the way that they measured poverty, and to quote it here, poverty is measured against prevalent national living standards as measured by the median household income of the country.
That's right, exactly. So why? But wait a minute. Okay.
Is in poverty in the
United States. All right, Jason. Don't you realize that by that measurement, wherever there is a gap, you will call the ones on the lower end impoverished, no matter how much they have?
No, that's not true.
Yes, it is. It is. If Bill Gates's types were the
they're
median,
measuring against the median household income.
So I know that
you're not in poverty by the definition of poverty that the OECD uses, and also in the United States.
No, but I would be. Wait. I would be if he were the median. If people,
what the median household income, how we measure that, right, in the United States.
You measure it by the way you measure any median. Unless there is a different measurement here, tell me the measurement.
Well, that's what they're using. They're using the median income.
Right. So I'm saying if the median were living like Bill Gates, I would be considered impoverished.
Wait a second, though. We're talking about the whole country. If you want to compare yourself to...
No, you're not listening to... in other words, it's all relative. So no matter how many television sets, cameras, and refrigerators and freezers and air conditioners and vacations a person has, if they are well below the median, then you say that they are impoverished.
Well, it depends on how much they're below the median. But anyways, by the OECD, 17% of the population in the United States.
I know. Do you know what? You know what is painful? No matter what I say, you come back with the same line. It's if you're reading from a sheet of paper. See, I respond to him, and he doesn't respond to me. Okay. In any event, I return to Nicholas Eberstadt. You see, there are two things here, and then I'd like you to comment, please. Number one, see, conservatives pretend like there isn't poverty. First of all, my answer is that liberals pretend that there's a lot more than there is. If there is any pretension or pretending, that is the pretending that really is objectively taking place because you are laying out what the definition is. If it doesn't, poverty, you are saying, let's look objectively at what the impoverished have. And they're saying impoverished only means relative to the median. But what if you are well below the median and still doing well? What if you can still take a vacation and still have a car and still have air conditioning? Is that a fair argument?
Well, I think that liberals and conservatives should both be interested in the trend of absolute poverty, physical hardship in the United States. That should matter to people all across the political spectrum. That's what the official poverty rate was designed initially to track. The OECD and others look at relative poverty. There's an argument for that, but that's in a way kind of changing the subject. That's not what our official poverty measure was meant to look at. What you have to remember about the United States also, and this bears on the whole question of income inequality and international income comparisons, is that all of these international comparisons are based upon snapshots in time. In the United States, there is a huge amount of churning. Social mobility goes up. Social mobility also goes down. Only a tiny fraction of people in the United States actually have measured incomes that stay below this notional poverty line month in, month out, for years at a whole.
That's very important.
Mobility is hugely important here.
All right, let's go to Queens, New York on the Apple. Evelyn, hi, Evelyn. Dennis Prager and Nicholas Eberstadt.
Yes, I wonder if the guest realizes that today, at least in my area, food stamps is not just for food. I go to a large supermarket. It's a chain, and the lady ahead of me has half her order is food. Then she has hair clips, shaving cream, shampoo, coloring book, all this stuff. And I ask the clerk why she can get that on the food stamp. She says, oh, it's a new law now. We take it for anything.
That's fascinating. Nicholas?
What I should mention here is that people in the United States can get help from the government, not just if their income is measured at this poverty line that we were talking about, but people can get help from the government depending upon the program, whether they report 185% of the poverty line, that's for supplemental nutrition programs for women, infants, and children, or 250% of the poverty line, that's for Medicaid. People can qualify for means-tested government benefits at not just this very low level of income that we were talking about. There's an evolution that's gone on in this country that we've often missed in our conversation on it.
Well, we've had a great conversation. Nicholas Eberstadt, thank you for writing this important book, The Poverty of the Poverty Rate.
Thanks an awful lot for having me, Dennis.
You're very, very welcome. And I will continue with you, my friends, taking your calls and challenges. And I will tell you why I believe this is so important. And it has certainly nothing to do with not feeling for the really poor. Dennis Prager here. I think the call of the day, and there were a lot of good calls, is from the gentleman in San Diego. Why do you conservatives want to pretend there's no poverty? It's classic. In other words, the issue of what is true is not important. It's why are conservatives mean? That's the issue. We have been talking here. I talked to Nicholas Eberstadt this hour about The Poverty of the Poverty Rate. That's the name of his new monograph or book. Folks, I have a motto, as you know, first tell the truth, then give your opinion. And I want to know the truth. I want to know how extensive the problem of American poverty is. I have no position until I have, I can't know what to do until I know the extent of the problem. And arguing that it is distance from the median, in other words, the median income is this, so if you fall a certain distance from the median, therefore you are definitionally impoverished, is just absurd. What if the median is just very high? And so that if you fall a certain distance from the median, you still have a car and a home and medical care and so on. I mean, then you're not in poverty. You're just poorer than the median. But that doesn't make you impoverished, if the word is to have any meaning in our lives. That's Patrick in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Dennis Prager.
Hi, Dennis. Glad to hear your voice.
Thank you.
I'm a daily listener, and I just wanted to give you a true and fair and accurate picture of what you're speaking of. I had to call in about this because I am one of those people. I have a house that is valued at about $240,000. It's paid off. I have a family of six. I have three cars. I have medical insurance. But in many of the programs, I have an income that's pretty low, around $41,000. I can get into energy assistance. I could get food stamps. I could get all sorts of assistance through the state and federal government if I needed to.
Yep.
And I think that's outrageous. It's just what you're talking about. They look at the income,
uh-huh.
but I could take the value of my house, if I had to, sell my house, live in an apartment for 15 to 20
That's
years.
That's right.
And you, how can you call that poverty?
Why do I assume that you are a conservative and not a liberal?
I'm an extreme conservative.
Yes. Well, I knew it as soon as you said that you could get that aid, but you choose not to. And in other words, you hold yourself up to a higher standard than what you want. Oh, it's a real battle for our society. But you can't wage it if you don't tell the truth at the outset. Thanks for listening. You are listening to The Dennis Prager Show.